welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. A progressive and populist insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining show on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people and not just the elite few. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters from his mid-Michigan attic, it's time for the award-winning Pat Johnston. It's all yours, Pat.
Yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast, the first episode of 2026. I am Pat Johnston, and yes, your ears did not deceive you. The show open, the song there, is a little different this year, and that's thanks to my good friends over there at Space Leopard and his little venture called Wander Beats. You'll be hearing some of the old classics that I've played here by Wander Beats here in the past, but I'll also have some newer music this year thanks to Wander Beats. So check out Space Leopard on various streaming sites and also on YouTube, especially if you are in need of some music for your project. And yes, show voice Jessica is sending me a ton of new liners for this year as well. Let me just give a quick thanks to Jessica for all of her hard work. And if you heard the Monday Musing here this week, you'll notice that we changed a couple of things there as well, thanks to Jessica and her stellar and professional voice. Did you have a relaxing holiday? Well, except for that hideous Lions game on Christmas Day, but please don't be in despair, Lions Nation. Yes, they fell short of expectations this year, but they finished the year by beating the Bears, which, you know, was nice. They finished with a winning record, and they will be back and hopefully a little healthier next year. I mean, for a change, could they just stay healthy? I mean, they're just too good not to be a contender again next year. Plus, I hope they learn their lesson to never, ever dance like Trump after a touchdown. It's bad luck, and well, they now know that to be the case. Hopefully, they learn their lesson. Okay, breaking news as of this recording. Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel issued a ruling that called the heinous act perpetrated by MAGA Michigan Republican State House Speaker Matt Hall and Appropriations Chair Ann Bolin of Brighton, where they canned or blocked around $645 million in already approved funding from previous years, acted unconstitutionally, and they were in violation of the state's Separations of Powers Act. Well done, Attorney General Nessel. I have to give credit when credit is due. And look, I know MAGA Republicans acting unconstitutionally isn't really breaking news, but neither is their cruelty. I mean, if you recall, Matt Hall and Ann Bolin utilized a rarely used section of state law to block multi-year funding for a range of state projects across the state. And Matt Hall and Ann Bolin claim that they were ridding the state of fraud and abuse while never illustrating such fraud or abuse that they were really blocking. They simply wanted to attack the working class. That's how it always is. Now, Democratic State Senator Sarah Anthony of Lansing, who heads the state Senate's Appropriations Committee since Democrats hold a slim majority in the Senate, requested Attorney General Nessel to issue a formal opinion on whether or not Hall and Bolin's actions were within the law, and Nessel said they were not within the law. And as Michigan Advances' Ben Solis writes about the state's Separations of Powers Act, the separation of powers requirement limits the ability of one branch of government to exercise the functions of another. Well, well, well. Hall and Bolin's unilateral decision there put the House over every other branch of state government. And is Matt Hall having a temper tantrum or what? He's really crying. And he's promising to sue, hey, sort of like his dear leader, and that he'll show them that he and all of his MAGA Republican friends here in Michigan are all in on hurting working families, because that is their motivation. That is what drives them the most. And I should note, though, that not every MAGA Republican was as ecstatic about Matt Hall and Ann Bolin's little unlawful maneuver. Gongwer News Service here in Michigan reports that some Michigan House Republican members are feeling the heat as the funding for much-needed spending on projects in their districts suddenly dried up. And some of these Republicans are in vulnerable districts. And I love reading how one MAGA Republican named State Representative Kathy Schmaltz of Jackson is in one of those vulnerable districts, but she's trying the tactics of her dear leader Trump by simply lying to her voters. She told them that the funding Holland and Boleyn blocked was just paused. No, they were not paused. They were canceled. Nothing was coming in. Zero, zilch, nada. I mean, that funding went to both blue and red districts in Michigan, including funding for infrastructure, housing, and food support. And as the Detroit Free Press's Paul Egan reminds us, funding for the RX Kids program to help moms with their new babies receive no questions asked money for their baby's first year. And evidence in Flint, where the RX Kids program has been going on for over a year, is already proving to be a success story as evictions for new moms dropped by 91% in Flint. 91%! A new Detroit mayor, Mary Sheffield, made sure that one of her first moves since taking office last week was to launch the RX Kids program in her city, where Nusrat Rahman of the Detroit Free Press reports 44% of children under 18 years old live in poverty, according to U.S. Census estimates. So well done there on Mayor Sheffield on that move. But please remember, as part of their scheme to block already approved funding for multiple state projects for working-class Michiganders, Matt Hall and Ann Boleyn clawed back some $18 million from that RX Kids program, you know, like Jesus would have done. Well, thanks to Dana Nessel's opinion, the Whitmer administration has resumed the spending on all those projects. And one more note, though, while Matt Hall and Ann Boleyn were busy blocking funding for work projects, clean energy projects, the RX Kids program, suicide prevention programs, funding for Holocaust museums, and wigs for kids with cancer, they chose not to block funding for various corporate welfare spending from the state's SOAR funding mechanism. SOAR is a taxpayer-generated government welfare program for corporations in the hopes of bringing jobs to Michigan. And of course, as we all know, it's been nothing but a massive failure. And it's something that Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer has really backed, which, if you've listened, I've criticized her a lot over the last couple of years. Yet for all their bold statements and promises that they gut corporate welfare, Matt Hall, Ann Boleyn, and MAGA Republicans refused to cut corporate welfare SOAR funding. And you still think they care about the working class? They said that those funds, by the way, were obligated. Right, because the RX Kids program wasn't obligated? Again, they don't care about the working class. Coming up in a moment to talk more about this news and other topics, since we're now in an election year, will be progressive Democratic State Representative Emily Diefendorf from the 77th House District. I'm looking forward to speaking with Representative Diefendorf here in just a minute or two, but I just need to mention two more things, if that's okay. First, the Trump regime's tearing apart of international law to kidnap and arrest Venezuelan dictator Nicolas Maduro. Now, the regime claimed that it's all about drugs, but we know it had nothing to do with drugs since Dear Leader himself recently pardoned a former right-wing Honduras leader named Juan Orlando Hernandez, who U.S. officials said was at the center of one of the largest and most violent drug trafficking conspiracies in the world. He was sentenced to 45 years in prison for trafficking cocaine to the United States. Now, Juan Orlando Hernandez gained praise from Dear Leader when they were both in office at the same time a few years ago, and Dear Leader loved it when Hernandez moved the Honduras embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem in Israel. So you see, Dear Leader liked him, and after serving just 1 year in prison, Trump pardoned Hernandez. Meanwhile, the drug trafficking case against Maduro is already falling apart. But right. The Trump regime really cares about lawlessness and drugs. Look, I'm sorry, but we have a convicted felon who's also an adjudicated rapist and who tried to overturn a free election in this country. Anyone want to kidnap him? Anyone? Do we really have to take bets? While I'm thinking about it, do we have to take bets on if Venezuela is suddenly going to become some big success story? When have any neoconservative visions of democracy and a privatized country overseas ever worked? When has that become a success story ever? Can I just say Iraq? This whole charade is and has always been about oil for multinational oil corporations and refineries. And now, Dear Leader says Venezuelan oil money will be held in offshore bank accounts. Hey, I'm sure that'll just trickle down right to us, right? If it ever even reaches the United States in the first place. Don't hold your breath. And of course, many milquetoast corporate Democrats issued weak responses after the invasion because, well, some of them really wanted Maduro out, and they've got oil companies and defense contractors backing them too. Finally, as of this recording, protests are breaking out in Minneapolis, Minnesota after a 37-year-old American citizen and a mom was shot and killed by Dear Leader's ICE Gestapo. And it happened in broad daylight. I'm sure many of you have seen the videos. It's grotesque. And while she was slumped over in the driver's seat in her car after having her head blown off, ICE officials blocked her from receiving any medical attention for minutes and minutes and minutes. Sickening. Now, the numerous videos of the murder have, I guess, turned into some political Rorschach test for MAGA Republicans who claim the 37-year-old mother was rightfully killed in her car. It's sad. Even though she backed up to give herself room to turn the steering wheel so she could escape ICE Gestapo members. I mean, they could have just let her go and found her later and arrested her for what I'm not still really sure about. But no, they fired three times in her car, the final time after her car was already past the agents. And of course, the Trump regime is telling us not to believe our own eyes, but they're telling us that she was trying to run over ICE officials when that's not what happened. MAGA Michigan Republican Senate candidate and former defense contractor, because who says government can't produce jobs, Florida Mike Rogers released the following sickening statement after the incident, after the murder, I should say. He said, "When you constantly demonize ICE, violence spirals and lives are on the line. It's time for the left to wake up." Time for the left to wake up. Is that right, Florida Mike? What happened to the days of when you MAGA Republicans said you never let the government tread on you? I thought that meant for all of us, but no, you meant just for the select few. I got it. Got it. And regardless of what you think, how is ICE now making this country safer as it guns down American citizens? That's lawlessness. And I think we have to seriously begin thinking about passing laws that not only force ICE Gestapo agents to be unmasked, but we have to think about passing maybe a law that would hold each of these ICE agents accountable for taking part in a war against their citizens. It's time. Remember in 2018 when anti-Nazi and anti-white supremacist protester Heather Heyer was murdered by a white supremacist who ran her over and others over in Charlottesville, Virginia? You know, that incident where Trump declared there were good people on both sides. Is there any difference between what that guy did to Heather Heyer in Charlottesville and what this ICE guy did to this 37-year-old mom who was an American citizen? I don't see it. I see no difference. That is what authoritarianism looks like. You're listening to LOL.
A podcast that believes in using common sense to move Michigan into the future. And by common sense, we mean progressive sense. We've all seen what 40 years of Republican leadership did to this state, and we refuse to go back. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. You can follow Pat on Facebook or X. Pat still calls it Twitter. Or on the Gram, Threads, and also on YouTube. Subscribe to the show on YouTube and wherever else you listen to your podcasts. All right, I think we gave Pat enough time to catch his breath. Let's get back to it. Here's Pat Johnston.
Thanks again for listening to Left of Lansing here to start out 2026. Just wanted to say that over the break, I was busy updating the podcast page on leftoflansing.com, but we're still dealing with some issues on the homepage of the site. And my website guru, my good friend Rich, promises to all of you that he's looking into it and he'll have that all fixed up soon. But still, you can find an archive of each show on leftoflansing.com, and wherever you get your podcast, you can get the archives there. We're also on YouTube as well, and you can find find an archive of the show dating back, I think, to about mid-2023. And plus, that's where the Monday Musings and Friday Shorts are posted. And you can also check out my YouTube Shorts featuring commentary that you won't get here on the show. Okay, I'm thrilled to open up 2026 with my guest this week because they are one of my favorite progressives in Lansing, who not only believes it's their job to represent all of the people, especially those who can't pay for lobbyists, but who's just an overall good person who's trying to make her constituents and all working class Michiganders' lives better. Democratic State Representative Emily Diefendorf is from the 77th State House District, which comprises of Ingham, Eaton, and Clinton counties. And Representative Diefendorf is my guest here this week. Thanks so much for being on, and I hope that you had a pretty decent holiday break, at least.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. It was as calm as anything could be at this time in history, I guess you could say. So I'm not complaining about that.
Yeah, that's pretty much the same for me, too. All right. Well, I have so much that I really want to cover with you here this week, but you're the first state representative that I've gotten to speak with since MAGA Michigan Republican House Speaker Matt Hall and his state House colleague Ann Bolin powered through a vote last month on the House Appropriations Committee to block $645 million in work spending. And that spending, which was already approved in previous years, was to go to a number of projects, such as, for instance, the RX Kids program to help new moms, numerous work projects throughout communities around the state, suicide prevention, wigs for kids with cancer, clean energy jobs, and also making charter schools more transparent, among other things. But now, in a breaking story that happened just a couple of hours ago before we are talking here, Michigan's Attorney General, Dana Nessel, has determined the act by Matt Hall and Ann Bolin was an unconstitutional process that violated the separations of powers clause, according to the Attorney General. So since this is breaking news here, Representative Diefendorf, can I get your reaction to this news?
I'm eternally grateful to our Attorney General for waging this battle, for challenging this really horrific and damaging, I don't know, unprecedented as long back as we can tell, move on Hall's part to revoke those dollars. We had a feeling that within the House Democratic Caucus that it was unconstitutional. And if it was constitutional, that it certainly was not ethical or good governing. And the Attorney General's opinion supports that. And we look forward to getting our communities that funding for very essential projects that support just about every layer of the work being done on the ground for our neighbors.
I think Matt Hall said that they will be taking this to court, and he called Dana Nessel's decision there political, because, of course, what they did was not political, right?
Yeah, and I don't know what kind of a human you have to be or not be to go to court in order to deny children access to really essential services, but that's pretty awful. I'm not sure how you go home and sleep well after waging a legal battle in order to not help people in Michigan. It's not going to go well for Matt Hall. It's not going to go well for Michigan Republicans. As folks like to say, you know, mess around and find out. And I don't know, it really seems like they're just inviting the scrutiny by doing blatantly unethical and immoral things to the average Michigander. And it is going to bite them in the ass.
Did you have a good idea that Matt Hall was going to take such a drastic move to block this spending?
So we had not one clue that this would be happening. That doesn't mean that we put anything past what Matt Hall is willing to do and is capable of doing, regardless of whether it is harmful to Michigan. We know that whether it's ego or that he's taking marching orders or that he is just adoring of Trump and wants to try as hard as possible to emulate everything that our president does at this time, anything could happen under Hall's leadership. So I don't think that we were surprised that he did something awful. I think that we were shocked and appalled that it was as clearly damaging and harmful to our communities as it was. And as soon as we learned what was happening, then we started to fight back against it, as did our communities. I know we saw a lot of engagement from nonprofits and everyday people over all of these cuts as people started to recognize how it was going to impact their lives.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, how was this going to affect your district? I assume in a number of ways.
Yeah. So in my district, it was everything from infrastructure projects to advocacy organizations for child survivors of sexual violence to food resources, every aspect of our daily lives, but also of preventing and recovering from trauma, just being able to put food on the table, being able to get support on our jobs, being able to go to a zoo that isn't crumbling. These are not nothing. We already had passed a budget that was bare minimum, bare bones, pure essentials at the end of this last budget season. None of those things could afford to be eliminated. We already had cut more than was good for Michigan.
And this just sets up a horrible, horrible precedent. I mean, are we going to have a state government where, okay, so one party is in control and can go back and cancel all this funding that was approved, and then when the other party gets into power, they'll just do the exact same thing? That's horrible government. That is not governing for the people at all.
No, I think Republicans rely on Democrats to show more integrity because if we did not show more integrity, then they would feel a lot of the same pain as we gave it back to them. The fact is that the Democratic Party right now is really doing an about face. We are reorienting ourselves and making sure that we are advocating for the public and Michiganders in a purer, more participatory and collaborative way than we have seen happen from any political party for a really long time. We would like to see all of us do governing better, which means when they do something that is motivated by political games or by ego and to the detriment of our constituencies, we can't go in that same direction. We don't want to give that back to them. What we do need to do is continue to show a spine and courage right now and calling folks out when they do things that are harmful and when they are not good stewards of public office. We need to distinguish what a good public servant is and when it's all about governing for one person and their agenda.
Is it really just about cruelty being the point? I mean, is it that simple when it comes to their agenda?
I don't think it's ever as simple as cruelty being the point, but cruelty is certainly an acceptable strategy, an acceptable means to an end for the Republican Party at this point, at every level of government, whether it's the attack on and the shaming around empathy. Why should we care about other people? And the fact that that's even a question, to the increased misogyny, to trying to shift women out of the workplace and disappear our neighbors off the street with efforts by ICE, and the enabling of all these things at different levels of government, even if it's the federal government that is empowering all these things and executing these things, the enabling that is done at every point in government, this all has to do with power. It all has to do with power and really funneling the resources and the power and influence to a very, very small group of people. Right now, our wealthiest neighbors and corporations are really doing pretty well. They may be complaining about tariffs sometimes, and I really appreciate that they are dissenting when it comes to how it's impacting their bottom line. But if there is any group that is avoiding the pain of this moment, it is the wealthiest among us, because all of this is, for the most part, helping them.
If you don't mind, I'd like to piggyback a little bit what you just said there at the end of your answer, talking about corporate power and how they're doing pretty well, the corporate donor base doing pretty well, despite, let's say, the tariffs. Because the part I did not find surprising with this whole story is that for all of his speechifying that he was against the corporate incentive fund here in the state called SOAR, or corporate welfare, for all of his talk that, hey, once he gets in and gets into power, he's going to clean up SOAR and he's going to get rid of corporate subsidies and corporate incentives and corporate welfare. Despite all of that, Matt Hall did not cut anything from the SOAR fund, because he and Representative Ann Boland said those funds were obligated. And to me, Representative, it just shows how MAGA Republicans in the state and across the country really pretty much just show that they love to do business as usual, which is go after programs helping working class Michiganders, but then they won't dare touch money designated for the corporate donor class. And I see that as just another reason why working class families are so tired and so angry with Lansing, because they don't feel they're being represented there.
Yeah, I mean, consider that we gave billions of dollars away in corporate incentives that did not manifest jobs. It did not build industry. It did not reduce unemployment in any significant way. We really need that money right now, don't we? Mm-hmm. So we have gone through and we have, with a fine-tooth comb, took out good things and bad things. In Hall's own words, we lost some really good things. That's what he told his members in order to comfort them after this last budget cycle and then the clawing back of the funds that were allowed to be passed through the budget by the way of special projects. So
Yeah.
I do think that they know what they're doing. What is dangerous to not just Democrats and the Democratic Party, but to all of our communities is that Republicans right now know what will resonate with voters. They do. They know that everyday affordability and making sure that you have social stability and a reliable job, but have the most essential access to meeting your basic needs. They know that that is top of mind for the average person. So they're going to talk as if they understand that and are prioritizing it. It's just not going to translate into the policies they pass because they want to appease the folks that they've always tried to appease in the Democratic Party in order to sustain. They would have to acknowledge that a lot of their approach and priorities have harmed folks, and in the case of just this year, made everyday life that much harder for folks who are really struggling. They're not going to say that out loud. So instead, they'll say, we want to make sure that you have access to housing and that everything is affordable and that corporations don't dominate. And then they're going to open the door wide open for corporations when they want our help.
Right. We know who they represent and who they don't represent. And while you mentioned that tariffs may have been hurting some of these business sectors and some corporations, they're still able to hang on, unlike maybe other parts of the economy. For example, you represent a lot of farm country, and I was wondering if you've heard from many farmers on how these tariffs have hurt their bottom lines. Again, they're hurting, while many corporations are either able to sustain those tariffs or they're just passing the price increases down to the consumer. Have you heard many farmers and how these tariffs are hurting their bottom lines?
Yeah, so regardless of industry, tariffs have been harmful to the United States economy. For farmers, it impacts them in a multitude of ways that we often don't think about because being able to grow something and distribute it, market it, requires coordination along a chain that really relies on our ability to go in and out of the country. Just this last year, I spent a bit more time working on progressive farming and learning about how many of our agricultural products we get from elsewhere that complement what we have in the country. And if we cut off that access to other nations and their supply, of course, our prices will go up. We simply do not produce most of the products that we rely on for our daily sustenance, whether that's nutritional or to take care of our animals or to run industry. So we will have to continue paying those costs or build up brand new industry and corner the market, at least within the country, on products that have not been our bag up until this point. One example that was brought up to me regularly was that we have oat farmers that are really struggling because they may be able to venture into the oat market in order to start to make up for that gap that we're experiencing now because we vastly rely on other countries to send us oats, but then they don't have the processing infrastructure within the United States in order to help them to get that off of their farms. So we have oat farmers trying to make up for what we're losing, and the part of the agricultural markets that we have not been strong in, but we don't have the rest of the process in place to actually support their work, and they end up with crops actually dying in their fields or sitting in warehouses. So we cannot underestimate the interdependency of our economic systems, but just for getting what we need on the average day.
And the whole thing is, we didn't have to be in this place at all. It is all self-inflicted, of course. Representative, you mentioned the word affordability earlier on, and that's why I would like to just talk a little bit about your water affordability bill. Because I know it's something that has always been very important to you, and that's why you and other co-sponsors have introduced this bill. So if you don't mind, I'd like to have you talk more about it here with my listeners and why you felt that it was of the utmost importance to introduce such a bill right now in Lansing.
Yeah, so our package is the Water Affordability Now package, and my bill is House Bill 4555, and that is the main bill that creates a water affordability program for Michigan, and then there are a host of bills besides that that complement that effort with how that program would work. And any water affordability program, but especially this one, as we have seen the public really come to experience it in their pocketbooks and demand something different and better from our utility companies, but also we see that there just isn't that check of power that ensures that people get the resources that they need just to survive. We needed to acknowledge that water is a need. Water is a human need. We cannot survive without it. It is a justice issue. It's a civil rights issue. We cannot go without water, and that means it has to be affordable and accessible, regardless of who you are. So we did develop a program that allows for income-based water billing, debt forgiveness, water shutoff protections, and without adding an additional fee to the water bill. It is a, I want to say misunderstanding, although I don't want to be that nice about it, to assume that our utility companies cannot afford to cover the costs of making sure that water can stay on while folks get themselves back on their feet, sign on to programs, payment programs, get other assistance that they need. The fact is our utilities are doing really well. Much like our other corporations, our utilities are doing just fine right now. And yet we have DTE, which is again saying they're going to increase their fees. The cost of the actual product itself is going up. And as of today, I was reading that there is an additional fee that is being added to the DTE bill in addition to the fact that they recognize their core costs are going up. This is unacceptable because they are still making a huge profit, and we have people who are going days and weeks and, you know, in some places in the state, months without something like water. But in addition to water, we can apply that same logic to heat, to shelter. If a human being needs it, we know exactly what happens when the human being doesn't have access to it, and that is unacceptable. Making it difficult for people to survive is not humane.
Wow, DTE putting a fee to add on their already high costs, their high rate costs. I think what they've got the highest residential power rates in the Midwest. So not a surprise there whatsoever. Representative, just before it leaves my head, I think I read somewhere that the federal government slashed funding by 77% or something like that through the years when it came to helping citizens pay for their water bills. And of course, what happened is that put more burden on the states, and it's leading to a rise in water rates, I guess, not just in Michigan, but across the country. Can you talk about that?
Well, we certainly experience the lack of support that the federal government has offered to states in all realms, including this one, as part of what is making this more difficult. But combine that with the fact that the price itself is increasing. We're talking about resources that really are finite, and we need to figure out how to preserve. And there are any number of reasons as to why it's becoming more expensive, but we know that regardless of any of that, our utility companies are doing just fine. So there has to be some way to address everybody's needs without putting utility companies out of business, regardless of the support that may or may not come from the federal government. And I know you wanted to talk about that in some other areas as well, but when the federal government is not stepping up, it impacts every single step all the way down and determines how much our state governments and our local governments can do themselves, which is why we, at the same time that folks like Speaker Hall and Donald Trump keep emphasizing that our neighbors need to just figure it out and make sure that they survive somehow without the assistance of government, our corporations don't have to get scrappy in the same way at all right now. But we need to make sure that that need is met regardless of whether the federal government is going to help us or not. Because according to the federal government right now, it's a survival of the fittest. And we're not talking about fittest. We're talking about the most privileged and affluent in this country.
And that's the part that really, really gets me fired up, the representative, because we're talking about water. Water. We need water. People need water in order to survive. And I always just find it so upsetting to hear people say, no, those working class people, they've got to do better. They've got to pull themselves up from their bootstraps. They shouldn't be counting on our tax dollars. They shouldn't be counting on government help to help them just get water. They've got to be rugged individualists and rise up by themselves. They can't be counting on anybody else. Yet at the same time, Representative, those same people love their tax breaks, love their tax incentives, love their corporate welfare. love their government contracts, but we're always being told that they're the successful ones. They're the ones pulling themselves up from their bootstraps. I'm sorry. I know I kind of went off there, but I just don't understand it, especially since so many in the working class are one layoff away from being in this predicament. That just gets me going. Yeah, I don't know. Sorry. And then I went on a little rant there. Thanks for letting me just get that off my chest. But let's talk about more on how the federal government, what's happening on the federal side of things, is affecting your district. Obviously, we had Elon Musk and so-called DOGE, which didn't cut any real government spending, but it did cut a lot of programs, did go after a lot of working class programs. That's hurting a lot of people right now. And then, of course, we had the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. I call it something else on the show, but I won't say that with you on the show. But we had that bill pass Congress, get signed into law. And so I was just wondering, how has your district been affected by what's been happening on the federal side of things? Or what are the fears of what will happen here in the near future?
Well, I'll tell you, when those cuts were looming, prior to them actually going into effect, and us starting to feel the pain of that, I asked one of our federal legislators, how can I prepare my community for this? How can I go through and take inventory of all of the support that people are currently receiving from the federal government in order to anticipate what they will lose so that we can come up with a plan to ensure that we mitigate that harm? Like if we're left with just community mutual aid, I've got to know where that community mutual aid needs to focus. And I was told, Emily, you don't even have to do an inventory because every part of your community will be impacted. And that's because Lansing and the surrounding area is disproportionately impacted by poverty. So it's disproportionately impacted by food insecurity and lack of access to healthcare, really needing core social welfare programs for somebody to be able to feed their family, to not get sick. That is absolutely how it panned out. Just the panic when the budget was first passed with less, because, of course, we were receiving less from the federal government and had to anticipate operating in a leaner way. So Republicans took that a step further and called everything fraud, whether it was or not. One of my favorite math equations that just didn't math was when we were told that we were saving money on Medicaid because we were making it harder for people to qualify for Medicaid. Yes, that is what the number would say if all we were looking at was how much we were not spending. But again, that's being naive. It's creating really poor, irresponsible public policy. To be honest with you, it is making everything that much more expensive down the line because we are not taking care of people at the root level and in a way that will keep them stable. And instead, creating a situation where the complications, the problems, the challenges in each person's life will be that much harder, that much more numerous, and that much more expensive down the line as all of these things compound. So, as I said earlier, we have advocacy organizations, we have folks like the Women's Center of Greater Lansing, we have infrastructure changes or improvements to essential resources in town, but we also have people struggling for healthcare. And we are still at this point in the year crossing our fingers that somebody will care enough to make sure that folks can hold on to healthcare who have benefited from these programs over time. That is a battle for this week. So there is not one part of anybody's life that is not impacted by this. One thing that I think people are learning the hard way right now is that everybody knows somebody who accesses Medicaid out of necessity, cannot go without it. And that means that everybody's life is impacted by this.
You are so right about that, Representative. I think there are some who think, yeah, it sucks that it's going to be happening to some people, but it really won't affect me. No. If it's affecting one group of people, it is going to affect all of us because we are all in the same boat, at least those of us in the working class, not in the elite class. So no, you bring up a great point there. All right, I've kept you on long enough. I just have one more question for you. Obviously, we got some, this is a big election year that will be happening later on. Got big races in Michigan, including your own, of course. But if you had your way and you were running things within the Democratic Party, how would you like Democrats to run this year? Or maybe you could talk about what kinds of messaging you would like to see Democrats really hone in on to reach working class voters here this year.
Well, thank you for asking that. If only more progressives were in charge,
Right.
but I do think that that's a possibility. Over time, we absolutely should see more progressives in leadership positions and helping to decide on the messaging and our strategic approach to serving our communities best. Because one thing that I feel very confident in is that progressives speak for the average person. We know what our neighbors are dealing with. A lot of us come from very grassroots places where we have been doing work alongside our friends in the community and our nonprofits for a very long time and are in regular communication, in part because progressives believe really strongly in a collaborative participatory democracy. And right now, I think we recognize that a certain level of trust has been lost in politics, politicians, in whether our elected representation is actually going to represent us or just invest in self-preservation. So I do think that we have work to do to build the trust that our voters have in us, that our constituents have, that we will serve them and serve them in being able to access their very justifiable needs, basic needs, everyday needs, and affordability. But I think we also have to show courage and resolve. We need to say the thing. We need to, as folks like to say these days, right, say the quiet part out loud because it's not so quiet. We still have a lot of Democrats and folks on both sides of the aisle that are recognizing some really hard truths about the world right now and this country today, this year. And we still aren't seeing a blunt conversation about exactly how serious and threatening what is happening in our country is right now. So I do think that for us to win elections, we're going to have to be honest. We're going to have to be willing to differentiate between right and wrong in a very clear way. We're also going to have to be able to relay instructions and plans for how our neighbors can be involved in their own lives, their own change, and waging a defense against this attack on our democracy and on due process, on the rule of law, on our Constitution. We, as elected representation, and as want to be elected representation for our new candidates out there, have to show that we speak for and are the people, absolutely speak to the affordability of everyday life, but also speak to the humanity in those around us and the violations of that. We have to hold the line on what is good and what is true and what is fair and in an unapologetic way. This is not a time for the people we serve to feel like they have to carry the weight for us. We should be modeling how to do democracy better and responsibly for the people that we serve. And if we do that, honestly, Donald Trump is making it very easy for us to demonstrate a contrast. And that's what people want right now. That's what people they deserve.
Real quick, are you optimistic that progressives, as what we saw, you know, what happened in New York City with Mamdani winning and some other races across the country, are you optimistic that progressives are beginning to maybe gain more power and become more of a voice within the Democratic Party, especially here in Michigan?
I am optimistic that progressives will become more influential. When I first started running for office for this position, I had a very seasoned Democrat actually come to tears because I called myself a progressive and I was told that I'm going to ruin everything. Emily, don't call yourself a progressive. Don't run on that platform. We've worked so hard. You're going to ruin everything. And I acknowledge that that created a lot of obstacles and challenges for those of us who were coming in with a progressive platform. But over time, I have found hope in the fact that, as often happens when you commit to being on the right side of history, gradually people come over. And when I see excitement about progressive platforms right now in response to Mamdani's race, as we're talking about what we need to focus on these upcoming elections, I'm seeing folks of all ages, of all demographics, say, we want what is good for the people. And those priorities are the priorities that are being echoed by the progressive movement.
Right.
And that is hope for
Me too. Progressive Democratic State
me.
Representative Emily Diefendorf from the 77th House District. Thanks so much for taking the time to be on the show this week and for talking with many of my listeners here who are just tired of the same old, and who are looking for real representation and leadership in their government. You give a voice, like I said, to many of the voiceless throughout the state. And as always, I'd love to have you back on again soon.
Thank you. Anytime.
This isn't a conservative podcast. We actually believe in freedom here. And we don't lose sleep over solar panels either. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Don't forget, we're on YouTube now. Subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever else you get your podcasts. Tell Pat what you think of the show by contacting him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, let's get back to the show with Pat Johnston.
A special thanks to State Representative Emily Diefendorf for spending time on Michigan's premier progressive podcast here again. I'll provide links to Emily's official state rep page and also their Facebook page. The representative, I have to say, said something about empathy, and that's really lacking in some circles of society completely. And I'll go further and say that empathy is viewed as weakness inside the MAGA cult, particularly in the MAGA bro culture. It's something that I'd like to examine further in the near future, okay? Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. I know this is a Michigan-based political show, but as you heard from Emily Diefendorf, sometimes what happens on the national side of politics hits us here at home as well. And during my last question, you heard Representative Diefendorf and I talking about how Democrats can win elections this year by running on bold, common sense, progressive values if they really want to win. But that also means picking the right candidates to press such a message. I was struck earlier this week by something establishment Democratic Congressman Dan Goldman from New York City said as he began his re-election bid. Goldman, who's been a huge supporter of the Netanyahu government, said that he will provide results, not revolution. Now, Goldman is facing a stiff primary challenge from popular progressive Brad Lander, who was the former city comptroller and who teamed up to support Zoran Mamdani to stop Andrew Cuomo in that New York City mayor's race last year. And polling suggests early on here that Lander has a very, very good chance at defeating Dan Goldman. But I was baffled by Goldman's tagline, "Results, not revolution." What does that even mean? What, advocating for free childcare while the Trump regime is currently ripping away federal childcare funds is revolutionary? What? Hell, State Senator Eric Nesbitt here in Michigan, who's also running to become even further to the anti-American right wing of Dear Leader in his governor's race, is pushing for audits on this state's child care system, even though audits have already been done showing no fraud in the state's system. By the way, don't you find it funny how the MAGA cult suddenly got outraged with child care fraud stories in Minnesota, even though the Biden Department of Justice had already prosecuted several people involved in that case? And then, at the same time, Dear Leader J.D. Vance and Elon Musk proudly slashed funding for several inspectors general in our government because, you know, they were all these little nerdy pests who were just there to hurt the elite class, the corporate class. Anyway, ripping away childcare from so many working class families is what I would call revolutionary. Giving Elon and the tech bro industry billions in government contracts while busting up unions and gutting worker protections is what I would call revolutionary. Canceling funding and stopping clean energy projects to help revamp our expensive electricity grid while creating hundreds of thousands of new jobs is what I would call revolutionary, and that's what this regime just did. Trying to block millions in spending for jobs for working class families, for families dealing with daily strife, is what I would call revolutionary, as MAGA Michigan House Speaker Matt Hall tried to do. Giving massive tax breaks to corporations and the elite donor class is what I would call revolutionary. Advocating for higher taxes on the rich, accountability of the elites, and spending more money here instead of overseas invasions and wars, and more help for the working class is not what I would call revolutionary. That is what I would call being American. It is American, and it is what we should be doing. So again, while voting out MAGA this fall is imperative, it's equally important to ensure that we put strong populist progressives in those seats. Because if we just stick with the so-called results crowd, well, we already know they have zero idea and zero will to fight back against the authoritarian elites. And one reason is because they're part of the same class. Also, check out my YouTube short this week on why Michigan Democratic Congresswoman Haley Stevens is the worst choice for Democrats in that Senate primary race this year. She's also part of what I would call that so-called results crowd. But it's results for the corporate donor base. And besides, Stevens has no political acumen or skills for this important moment in American history. I talked about that 37-year-old mom who was an American citizen, being murdered in an American street by masked American ICE agents. And yet there's no oversight on ICE or their daily raids of terror on American streets. But last year, 75 Democrats voted in favor of a resolution put forth by MAGA Republicans in Congress that expressed gratitude to ICE and called for more police involvement in ICE raids. 75 Democrats voted in favor. Michigan Democrats, Sri Tandahar from Detroit, you know, the multimillionaire who does nothing in D.C., Bay City's Kristen McDonald Rivett, and yes, Haley Stevens, all voted in favor of that gross resolution. Having ICE gunning down American citizens in the street with no trial and no due process, are those the results Democrats are looking for?
You're listening to Left of Lansing. Music for the show and everything else on Left of Lansing is provided by Wanderbeats. To hear the latest project and complete music archives, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site or subscribe to Space Leopard on YouTube. Now, back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Thanks again to State Representative Emily Devendorf for talking with us. And before I go, let me just share quickly a part of an email that a listener sent me during the holiday break. And it really hit me, and I'd just like to share a part of it with you. They said, I just wanted to email to say how much I've enjoyed listening to Left of Lansing and how much you've taught me about Michigan politics. After Trump won, I was feeling really lost and despondent. I was too young to pay attention to politics when he first won, but I felt just so lost and scared when he won in 2024 and wanted to learn more about how to get involved in Michigan, and your show really taught me how to do that. Well, thank you. And as much as I love reading hate mail, I don't know, I'm sort of masochistic that way, I guess, I really prefer to read those kinds of emails because that's why I decided to do this little podcast in the first place. I wanted to help progressives connect across the state, and even more, I wanted those who felt hopeless and alone during these times to know that there are many of us who are on the same page. In fact, we outnumber them. Don't forget that. Everyone, please stay safe, but also stay bold. Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
You've been listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing was produced by Pat Johnston, brainstormed by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and yes, hosted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. Thanks to our good friend Rich for website assistance, and thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. We thank Audio Boom for publishing the podcast every week. Visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and we'll talk with you again next week.